Welcome to the Inner Sanctum.
In the shadows, got one last job, one last job.
Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to the Inner Sanctum. Sorry for the late start. I don't really understand what happened. The link was not working. Anyway, so we are good to go now. Real quick, before we get our guests in here, few updates. Let's see. First and foremost, we have a big tabloid-style article that is going to drop on Wednesday, and it's quite an important one for anyone that's been wondering what's up, what's going on, what's happening next. So that's coming out on Wednesday. I believe 10 a.m. is when it's releasing on my Substack first, and then it'll be out on the rest of the socials throughout the day. Let's see. Next, the other two things are, or three things. We are ending our Twitter, and we are ending our Instagram, and I finally started a TikTok, so make sure you go check out Aaron Wright's stuff on TikTok. And those are the big ones. Also, this is our first time streaming over on Twitch. So I don't know. It's been 2.5 years before we finally made the jump to start on Twitch. So we're a little late to the party, but whatever. Anyway, those are the big updates. And then, of course, there is our upcoming campaign, which is going to launch January 8th. But I'm trying to get out ahead of it and start an event page earlier. Before anything else, though, I want to make sure that we share that trailer. I could talk about that as well. Real quick, we are going to do a one last job graphic novel. We are switching over the current format to where we did the first two issues. We're just going to kind of pretend that we didn't and then just put everything out as one singular graphic novel for the people that have missed that story. It's the plan right now is to have an ongoing to have the same team that was on one and two to finish out the story and then just release the full thing as a graphic novel. So there will be no more single issues and one last job. That's not the cover. That's just a little graphic that I put together when I was messing around with coloring, because we are going to flip it into a full color graphic novel instead of the black and white series that it was. So make sure that you guys keep an eye on that, but that will be next summer. Before that, we do have Fall of Night coming out in January and the trailer for that.
Without fear in the face of your enemies.
This has been a story that I've wanted to tell for a really long time.
Be brave and upright, that God may love thee.
Exploring that fracture of faith when you're pushed too far in the name of God.
Speak the truth even if it leads to your death.
What happens at that point?
Safeguard the helpless and do no wrong.
All right. So before we digress anymore, let's bring in our guest. We have Nandor, who I haven't talked to in a minute. What's up, Nandor? How are you?
Hey, Aaron. Oh, I'm doing great. It's great to talk with you. It's been so long.
Yeah, man. Good to have you on. We have a secondary Aaron, so we are Aaron squared tonight.
Yeah, 2.0.
Aaron, how are you?
How you doing?
I'm good. And Michael, how are you, man?
I'm doing all right, guys. Hey, Aaron.
Hey, how Michael. Hey, dude. Great to see you.
It's a reunion.
Thanks for having me on.
Of course. Yeah, we're going to talk a little bit about everything. So we'll definitely get into current stuff that you guys have going on. If anybody comes up with questions in the comments, I know sometimes people are looking for information about getting into comics and all that stuff. And I guess that's because our background with Beards and Comics. this show is a little bit more geared towards you guys, though, rather than Beards and Comics when it was Matt and I talking about our journey. This was something that I wanted to do after we ended the regular podcast so that I can continue to support everybody like you all and kind of get eyes on stuff and, you know, just have some sort of other outlet where you guys can relax and talk rather than have to focus on, like, I don't know, doing a show yourself or something. Yeah, I do what I can. What's up, Joe? I hope you're doing well, man. Should give a quick shout out to that. I think we have 12 days left on the Atreidian Justice campaign. If you guys haven't checked that out, it was a first-time creator. Joe is the illustrator, and I was privileged to script it. It's a really cool story written by a 50-year-old Texas deputy, and it's pretty dope. And for a first-time campaigner, the dude's just killing it. He's, I think just a little while ago, he hit the 150 backer mark. Oh, wow. He's over 4,000. Like, it's just for a first time, insane.
Nice.
So make sure that's checked out. Before we get into anything too crazy, I like to play a game. So let's play a game. Everybody prepare your brains.
God.
All right. All three of you. I need someone to give me an answer. So you have your technology in front of you to use should you need it. But I need to know something. I need to know what the M's in M&M's are for. Not the wrapper, the candy, M&M's. I would like to know what those M's stand for. So, somebody figure it out. Tell me.
Might and munch.
not quite.
That's a good guess. The beautiful internet says Mars and Murray.
Yep.
Okay.
Which so, I don't. What does that mean? What
all is right. that? So Forrest Mars was the son of the Mars Company founder. He first spotted the British confection Smarties during the Spanish Civil War. He noticed that the candy shell prevented chocolate from melting. So he teamed up with Bruce Murray, who was the son of the Hershey Chocolates president, and the company later trademarked the melts in your mouth, not in your hands slogan.
Wow.
You get to carry that useless knowledge with you for the rest of your life. You're welcome.
That's kind of cool. I like, it's one of those things we take for granted, you know, like we just like M&Ms, like we don't, no one asks that question. I've never had anyone ask me that before.
Yeah. It was the sons of candy people.
See, I remember there was a documentary about Lego, how that started out. And the factory was like a wood, they did the wood toys. And I think one of the sons or someone in the company, I think it was the sons, saw the little Lego pieces and he wanted to invest in it. And then I think one of the factories actually burnt down or something, which gave them basically the space to actually go and start doing the production of these Legos. So if it wasn't for this, Lego wouldn't have been invented.
Yeah.
Huh. It's crazy how things get invented either by accident or, you know, design and stuff like that. So it was pretty cool.
Well, there you go, Gareth.
It was a dad's wood shop, and then the wood shop had burnt down after he passed away, and then he went to a convention and saw these little Legos, and he actually invested in those and brought it back and rebuilt the shop back up, and then he started.
Because it was his kid who started like building him into a tower, and he kept falling over. So that's why they have the little bits that click together.
Yeah, I watched that. That was a good documentary.
Yeah. So, John, awesome. Let's so the thing I like to do.
I can hear my wife sniggering in the background when I'm telling you that.
Oh, sharing more useless facts.
Yeah, fully useful facts.
Did you know?
Well, we got that out of the way. So yeah, not so much a game facts. As a just randomly having fun with random facts. The other thing I like to do is give a review and a recommendation, and then I'll involve you guys with picking what I'm going to read next. But first, let's talk about what the people last time picked. They picked Paladin of Axes. So this is, I think it came out the week before last, maybe. I don't know. I kind of lost track. Everything's off because we do this show the second and fourth weeks, and then we had an extra week. And so, you know, it's a couple of weeks old. Anyway, so Paladin of Axes. It's, in my opinion, an extremely wild, zany one-shot comic. Explores a band's roadie named Hector after he dies in a plane crash with the band. He's saved by some gnomes and becomes kind of like an Indiana Jones of sorts. He's an artifact retriever for, they're called the Underfolk, but gnomes and all that. Has a whole lot of horror elements, a lot of humor. The art was really good, and it's also from the creative team behind Analog. I really like that this was a standalone story, so you just buy that one and you're done. And, you know, it also threw some curveballs in there, and it had kind of a pleading ending to, like, trust your heart, almost like there was a moral to this crazy, not what you would think is a moral story. So if you guys are into horror or anything like that, check out Paladin of Axes. And yeah, it's a lot of fantasy elements too. My recommendation is Trove. All right, so I used to play this game on the PC back in the day when it came out in, like, I don't know, 2015 or something. And then I just forgot about the game for a long time until the fiance and I were just playing random games on Switch, and I downloaded Trove. And yeah, so I play it a lot now. Anyway, if you guys want a random thing that's like Minecraft, but better because it's just action and beating stuff up and collecting dragons, then check out Trove. I think this is the first time I've done a game, so I'm trying to broaden my horizons. And then last, you guys have to help me. So next episode, I will review one of these four. Everybody give me your thought, vote, whichever one. If you need to know more information about any of them, I can look them up. But we have Geiger Ground Zero from Image Comics. This is like there's another series called Geiger, but this is a prequel. So I think it's going to be two issues. And then there's Dungeons and Dragons, Fortune Finder, number one. And then there's Godzilla Rivals versus Mecha Godzilla, number one. And then Carnage, number one.
Geiger.
Yeah, I like the look of Geiger. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I read, I haven't read Ground Zero yet, but I read the first storyline, the first story arc, and it was fantastic. So I would, that would be my choice.
Yeah.
Awesome. It shall be done. All right. So next episode, I'll do a little review for Geiger and come up with whatever everybody's going to pick next time. Let's talk about y'all's stuff. I don't know who wants to go first. I guess Nandor's a fox in the corner. So what's new? What's happening?
Man. Thank you. You know, just first of all, thanks for having me. It's great to catch up and to talk comics with all of you. I feel very welcome to be in the Inner Sanctum. This is so cool. And I've really been enjoying your podcast and the series. So it's been great. But I've been, man, you know, on the grind here. I launched the Fabled Offering, which is my sci-fi fantasy one shot, on October 17th. It's been a crazy month of the grind and promoting and sharing it out, and it feels like just this endless endless hustle, you know. And you know, this is my sixth campaign, so I'm used to it, but you start to wonder, like, man, is it always going to be this difficult? Is it always going to be this hard to get eyes on your projects and whatnot? And I was talking to a friend the other day, and we were talking about how, you know, with crowdfunding campaigns and comics, you know, it's like you can't just hit the launch button and let it take off. You know, it's like you really have to be involved in it, and that's the whole point about doing a campaign. So we're in the final week of the Fabled Offering, and we just funded over the weekend, and that was a huge relief. I feel very blessed and pleased and excited, and you know, it feels like all of this has been worth it. You know, that's one of the main fears of doing a campaign is, you know, putting in all of that money, time and energy and all of that hustle, and for, you know, for it to fail or to not, you know, go where you need it to go. And so this is a very exciting time. You know, I'm in the final week, and I can, you know, really focus on the stretch goals for the book. And but just to give a quick pitch for it, it's a 40-page sci-fi fantasy one-shot about Grand Princess Aurelia, who is on a quest to save herself and her kingdom from her own past traumas. And she is trying to meet one of the ancient deities of this world named Sizon. And along the way, throughout this whole journey, as you can see from some of the covers and the interior pages, she's pregnant. She is carrying her child. And I thought it would be such an interesting story to write about a princess and a warrior princess, but someone who has to somewhat, you know, navigate the world of like what it would be to, you know, the anxieties and the fears of like being a parent, being a mother, and like being somewhat, you know, handicapped in a way of you wouldn't be as fast as you are, you know, being pregnant. And you not only are you trying to defend yourself, but you're also thinking about, you know, the child that you're carrying. And it's a very character driven story. It's a story about being afraid of being a parent, and also just having to face impossible choices while you're in this scenario. And it's all the backdrop of it is the sweeping sci-fi fantasy backdrop that just adds so much of everything that I love about the genres into one story. So it's planned to be a one shot, but if people really enjoy it and it's received well, we hope to expand upon it.
Yeah, this is a fantastic art as well. We'll get into a little bit about the current state of things after we kind of talk to everybody. So,
yeah,
Michael, what's up?
Hey,
what you doing?
I'm listening to Nandor talk about his lovely comic. I also supported Nandor does great work. The Man Child, I'm still waiting for what issue two.
Issue three. We got issues one and two done. Yeah,
it's great work, man. You've always been a fabulous storyteller.
Thank you.
So I finally, after 2 years, I finally got my comic onto Kickstarter with the rest of all my colleagues, and I am a contender now.
Welcome.
it's called Wild Oni. It's a great time to have a samurai product out, with things like Onimusha, Blue-Eyed Samurai, and Shogun being announced. That two of those three things just dropped in the last month, and they're all fabulous shows. But it's also a popular genre. It's a samurai supernatural fantasy fiction that really starts in the island of Tsushima, and it goes from Japan, would go over into Korea and get mixed up into like the Ming Dynasty of China. And it's really about a samurai who makes a pact with an Oni spirit, which is a primordial, like mythological origins character that helped create, you know, the island of Tsushima. It totally differs from the legend of, I think it's called Inazami and Inuzugu, which were the two primordial Japanese gods that created Japan and the island, and then had the three kids. It's kind of similar to the Greek mythology. But he makes a pact on his deathbed after being left for dead. His family was murdered in punishment for him not being able to be successful in leading the forces of Toyotomi into Korea to push into their territory. And because of that, they leave him for dead in the forest. He finds this like cave and like some kind of mystical chasm, and there's this meteoric prison that's speaking to him, and he just doesn't know what he's asking for. And I've always been a fan of like the Incredible Hulk and Ghost Rider. And so I really wanted to explore a story where a character had to deal with the internal and external components of what it's like to want vengeance, but also want redemption. And then also solve this mystery of like, is this family really dead or not? So he accepts this pact. He gets these supernatural powers. There's this Shinkai space that kind of gets opened up into his chi where Wild Oni lives. And when he sees the opportunity to take vengeance, he turns into this 9-foot hulking samurai with a huge fire wielding Odachi. And he doesn't care what's in front of him so long as he gets his vengeance. The series is going to be 8 issues long. This is the first issue of 8. It was originally just going to be an Ashcan, and then it kind of just evolved into 6 issues. And then because of the mythological stuff, I decided to put in there so I didn't have to be so anatomically correct about the history of Japan, which is super difficult to research without hiring someone from academia. I didn't want to be judged or persecuted for, you know, cultural appropriation. So I wanted to respect the culture while also exploring its fascinating parts too.
Right.
So
hey, Ralph.
I decided to take it into fantasy, dark fantasy, supernatural, fiction fantasy. So it honors some of the culture, but the landscape might seem different. Some of the wars and stuff might seem out of place.
Nice. Yeah. Sounds awesome. I'm playing around with a little bit of Japanese stuff myself, which is not like Aaron, myself, this Aaron, not Aaron Squared. I'm looking forward to doing that as well. Quite different in the vein that I went through to tell the story that I want to tell, and it's not really a samurai character, but he's in that world. So gotcha. Anyway, Aaron Squared, what's up?
Hey, how's it going?
It's gone. Tell us all about the Gray Man.
The Gray Man is my little take on exorcisms. So if you like bone-chilling terror, The Exorcist, Exorcist Believer, that kind of genre and films, then this is definitely for you. It follows a kind of local small town sheriff who gets a call that there's a disturbance at a local farm. He basically goes to investigate, and there's all like blood and death, chaos everywhere. And he starts to investigate what happened. And as he investigates and meets other different characters, it kind of leads into the Vatican itself and its practice rites and exorcisms. And basically what's different than what they officially tell people and what they unofficially do. So that's kind of the unofficial is where I'm getting into.
Sounds fun.
Yeah. So, it's all black and white. So it's very kind of horror themed. The artist, Hernan, is amazing. He's really nailing it. So it's pretty excited.
Awesome. Yeah. It's awesome. So it's your third series?
Yes, third series. My ongoing one is Anenra, which is a kind of a post-apocalyptic series. Blood and Fire, which is the samurai one. The third issue completed the Blood and Fire. I am dabbling with a sequel, which I may hopefully launch next year. Nice. I've already got a title, Ice and Bone, kind of same theme.
See what you did there.
Yep. So, but that one is going to be a definite end. I've already got it up in here. I just have to write the scripts. So that's on the cards for next year. But I'm concentrating on getting the Gray Man kind of out there and hopefully, fingers crossed, funded. So I can continue that. But it's all written. It's a 10-issue series. So fingers crossed, get the first one out there. I'm not sure if launching it this late in the year was a good idea. Seems to be like I think some people are struggling to get the word out. But if it doesn't fun, then I'll always try again next year.
Yeah, it seems to be
Blood and Fire. The first one didn't fund. So
that's right.
And now it's been really really successful. So
we'll have. There's to always second chance.
Yeah. That's the thing about Kickstarter. You can always come back.
You guys are all live now. How's everybody feeling about the current landscape of crowdfunding and Kickstarter?
Personally, it's a struggle. Though strangely, the third issue of Blood and Fire was really successful. I think it was funded within a week. And then the fifth issue struggled. And I don't think I got funded until like the last couple of days. And again, this one, I don't know if it's just the genre or just the late in the year with Thanksgiving and Christmas on the horizon.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, because it's, I don't know, it's a difficult landscape too. Usually horror does pretty darn well. So how much longer do you have left in yours?
Check. I got 4 days left.
Okay. All right. And you're pretty close, right?
What, in funding?
Yeah.
No, I'm about 54%.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, I mean, at least you have the last 3 days are going to usually have a bump. But I'm hoping. It's been freaking, it's been wild. Like, I had my trade campaign earlier this year, and I was like, man, I got to completely rethink the way I do this stuff. I mean, it funded, and that's great, but like nowhere near what I needed to get out of that campaign. And it did kind of help me a bit, like in a different way, where it was like, all right, because I knew it was superheroes. I knew it was going to be difficult. Always has been with the superhero stuff. That's my sixth superhero campaign, fifth or sixth. I don't remember. I pretty much, that's the deciding point of like, well, we got the trade out, so now it's time to just use the trade at shows, and because they do fairly well at that. But as far as campaigning for that kind of stuff, ridiculous. But I tried it anyway. Did fund, not great. Hoping that I'll see things kind of turn around with doing a different genre. And I'm honestly trying to mess around with my formatting and how I plan to release these things. So I've been putting a lot more thought into, am I going to keep doing floppies, or am I going to do like a premiere issue and then a full trade or full graphic novel? Like that's where I've been lately. So luckily, having different guests on every week, I get to pick everyone's brain.
Yeah. Because my high end tier is like we could actually be in the comic as a main character.
Right.
I mean, one of the campaigns of an Enra, they're great. The kind of three people, you know, were really into it. This time, no one seems to want to be immortalized in a horror comic.
They don't want to be possessed.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different characters you can be in. You can be a police officer. You don't have to be possessed. There are other characters. Yeah,
I got four spaces in my campaign where you get your head chopped off in the next issue. to redeem your honor for betraying your bread. So I've only sold one of those. I went all out with this campaign after being a part of like 40 plus campaigns, and it's just tough. We got Project We Love, which helped a little bit, but I only redeemed like 4% of my pre-signups.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't
Yeah, I saw that post. That's what?
Like, yeah, it's rough. Like, I don't know where they went, man. Maybe it was from being in pre-launch for like 6 months, which, you know, I've got plenty of pre-launch notifications. So, you know, someone must have saw it. So if you're watching this and you're out there, please come back. But it's rough, because if you don't use AdSense, or if you don't use, you know, Facebook ads, Facebook beefed up their spam settings and stuff this past year, especially with the AI and the DRM technologies that it put in. Even if you do a native post and you share to a group or page, they've given power to all the groups and pages to where they can choose to turn that off and you get automatically flagged. So the chances of you anchoring a post to maybe your podcast page or even your main site, or even your business page, and trying to share out to, like, you know, ISBN or Comics Unity online group on Facebook, it's either got to go through an approval process, which means if your link isn't in the post, nobody can find you, or if they don't look at it, it never gets approved. You can't go back and put your link on there. You'd have to use the Facebook ad system, which is what they want to do, because they want that money for you selling stuff on their platform. So yeah. If you don't use AdSense or Facebook ads, you're kind of just like the drug dealer on the street who's like, hey, man, you got some of this and I got some of this. You want to change off? And I hate to compare it that way, but like that's kind of the grind that I've discovered, you know, just from being on the logistics side of having to do copy editing and then writing and planning social media stuff, but actually in the trenches and being like, hey, will you buy my comic? Or hey, you want to help me make this thing to get it to print? It's significantly more difficult than I thought intentionally it was going to be. And you like, you throw in the drawn in tiers to attract people in. I got hollow foils, I got metal. I thought I included everything and give the readers like the best culture of choice when it comes to, you know, having a comic book. Not to the point of like pandering, but like if you just want a single issue of this is great. Here's the digital tier, here's like every option for all the alternative covers. That's one thing I learned in this campaign, like don't go all out on covers and blow your budget, because I've got six covers for one floppy, which is great because I got a lot of great artists. You know, Jeff Muth and Dan Kemp did a cover. Jeff Muth did a single cover. Michael Monty Moore came in and did a beautiful painted cover.
I love that cover. Oh, I love that cover so much.
That's actually Morichika's wife, Kogasai. And she plays one of the biggest plot twists in the entire story arc, which I can't wait to get to like issue 7 and 8.
Did you sell out of that cover or?
No. So that cover, you kind of have to like go up, I think right around like 35 or 40, but it's also in the add-on section. So someone just bought like the $8 cover, the retail. That comes with some extra stuff. They could just pick up that cover on the way out. I also sell it as a print too, just in case you don't want the cover or the book. You could just have the print as well. So, like, I thought about all those different things, but it's.
I want to jump in and answer Gareth's question real quick, because I don't know if any of you have had any experience with this. It is something that I know about and have experienced a little bit, but. So the big problem with Facebook and paying them to advertise is they're not good at it. It's just going to get in front of the same people that are already seeing it. I can't, like, including myself, like I did one for one of my own campaigns and I kept seeing my own ad, which is incredibly infuriating. But it's also on the other side of it, the algorithm is broken to the point, like if somebody else has something in the same vein as yours and they put in a lot of money, like happens a lot now, with, you know, these bigger names that are coming onto Kickstarter and stuff, they have the funds to pay an advertising person to put those posts up there. But if you're in that same vein, you get knocked out and then they've put way more money in it than you. So you almost have to wait for theirs to either time out campaign wise or maybe you'll slip in there, but it's honestly just not worth it.
Yeah. The IDW Ninja Turtles TTRPG keeps popping up on mine. So I know that if I put in like even a week ad at $20 a day, I'd still be hemorrhaging money because nobody would see it.
Right.
And then, like you said, the algorithm just kicks it back to people who look up content. And if you look through the same content, even in your reels, you'll notice this. Like if you watch workout videos every day, YouTube reels, Instagram reels, which shares reels algorithms with Facebook, also shows you that same content over and over and over. So the more you absorb, the more the algorithm feeds you. And that's what we call predictive programming. So you're programming yourself. All they did was make you the person doing it, but they also did that in ads too. So it's kind of, it feels like a scam. And what you said, Aaron, is it's more of like a monetized paywall, like to the highest bidder goes the spoils. And for people who have litmus budgets of like $25,000 or more on a project that they know they're going to bank $3.5 million on Marvel CCOM, because they're the biggest one on the platform for Chaos right now. Inside like the role-playing game / comic world, not the tech side of Kickstarter. I just think maybe Kickstarter might be oversaturated. But since this is my first project, it's kind of a litmus test for me. So now I'll go to IGG and then I'll go to Fund My Comic, maybe Zoop if they'll accept me. I'm not sure how to get on to them, and BackerKit if I could figure it out and figure out like where my audience is. I think that has a lot to do with the crowdfunding thing, because I've heard from multiple people that there's like camps of people who are on Kickstarter don't do IGG, and people on IGG don't do Kickstarter or Fund My Comic. Yep. And
fund my comic is to a whole bunch of different people who think completely different from, you know, IGG and Kickstarter. And then some people like the ability to have the 30-35 day leeway of being able to back out, which has become a big conversation amongst us crowdfunders, because even if I hit my $1,000 goal, if I don't have someone coming behind them and cushioning it, if yep. 4 or 5 people cancel, then I don't fund, and then the campaign has to go somewhere else, or I have to come back.
Or not even cancel. It's just the if their funds don't go through afterwards, it's a yeah. then you're like, well, I put that goal because I needed that amount of money, and
yeah.
Okay. There does seem to be a lot more scamming accounts and fake accounts on Kickstarter recently. It seems yeah. to be like a
yeah
overkill, and there's no regulate. You know, there's no regulating it at the moment from Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. So my idea yeah. would be to have people, because especially like the card declining. So if yeah. you pledge, it automatically takes the money out of your account. If it fails, you've got 3 days or 5 days to fix it. If it doesn't get fixed, your backing gets kicked out. Yeah. Then you have to verify your account to back anything else. I mean, there's various ways of doing it, but I think Kickstarter is very close to being, you know, inundated like a video game, just cheat, spam and cheaters trying to.
It's one of the benefits that I find on Indiegogo was that, you know, you pay for it and it's like you've already paid for it. If they can infiltrate that same mindset with Kickstarter, that'd be fantastic. Because this whole I can't tell you how many people post every day. It's like, oh, somebody threw $5,000 in my campaign. Like, I can't wait to see how long it takes before they take that out. especially if they picked a tier first, because then they've locked other people from getting that tier.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's a need a report button.
Well, they are starting to, you know, ban certain accounts, but there's mm-hmm. so many that it's hard to kind of like report every single one. So if they just redesign their platform, I think that would help a lot of people out.
Yeah,
when
I launched, you know, like not only do you get people that, you know, back and then you know, cancel it or if it's a bot or whatever, but you get all of those like scammers that are trying to get you to pay money so that they can promote your campaign. I think I got like 30 messages within the first like 12 or 24 hours of the campaign, and just like all these messages, like just asking like, do you need help? Yeah. Do you need help? You know, it's just crazy.
Yes, but I actually need the help.
Yeah.
I usually pick one and just start messing with them.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Because I remember one message just it's like, how's your campaign going? How are you promoting it? And I just said, well, I'm shouting from my rooftop. That seems to be getting people's attention. And he just ignored it and went, well, I can help you. It's like,
yeah.
No.
Or he'd just be like, I don't know, it's been pretty rough. Can we set up a time that I can talk to you on the phone? I need some advice.
I need help, please. Just to jump in real quick, like I have found this, you know, particular campaign to be you know, still somewhat challenging, just because you know, I've done a few, and you're always trying to learn from your past campaigns, and you're always mm-hmm. trying to learn like what worked and what doesn't work, and you know, what are people looking for, and just seeing how Kickstarter has changed over the years. And I think my biggest frustrations with the platform right now was, I do believe this particular month, I think the month of October, I think it had the largest amount of comic crowdfunding campaigns. And like, I don't know how long, it was like over like 300 or something that were being live or going live or whatever. And I mean, I feel like that's probably because a lot of people had the same idea of like, I don't want to launch in November or December because that's when the holidays are coming up. So this is like my last chance to launch, because that's kind of how I thought about it. I was like, I don't want my campaign running while Thanksgiving is happening, you know, while people are going out, shopping on Black Friday. You know, they're not going to be thinking about an indie comic, probably. You know, some people might, but there's that. And then, you know, in the past year, I've seen this unfortunate rise in NSFW content and covers and all of that stuff. And that's been really discouraging to me, because I don't do those, but also I feel bad for creators like me and other creators who are starting out or they're really serious about their work, and they want to put out good work and good quality work, and they have to compete with just, you know, the lowest common denominator of like attraction, you know, when it comes to you know, covers and trying to be, you know, I get sexy covers and whatnot, and you know, it gets people's eyes, but it's just really discouraging to see so much of it at such a scale that it feels like it buries other people's campaigns. So that's what really aggravates me.
I agree with that completely. It is a conversation I have very often. Not so much on here, but definitely with my fiance as well. It's just, it's difficult when it's like, that's not the kind of content that I want to put out, but it's the kind of content that I am forced to be up against. It's like, okay, yeah. Well, I'm going to put out, you know, a horror book, or I'm going to put out a sci-fi book, but then you're also up against horror and sci-fi books that are just like, here's 14 completely nude cover variants that you can choose from. it's difficult.
Yeah.
You're darn right, Joe.
Sex tells.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
It's temporary. It's a fleeting emotion, guys. It's a fleeting feeling. Just like you get that that NSFW cover, and you're like, and you set it up on the wall, and you're like, all right, go to work. It's like,
yeah, I love that you said. I love that you said you put it up on the wall, but you didn't say read it.
Yeah, and that's it.
Like, people, they're just buying a cover. Like, I swear, like, there's no way that the people that are buying those covers are like really serious about what the interiors are or like what the story is. Like, I mean, it would surprise me, you know, but you know, it's just, they're paying for a cover. They're paying $30 for a cover when you could be paying, you know, $20 to $30 for a substantial reading experience that, you know, you'll have forever. But
I think that's going to be a battle that you're always going to be up against. So, like, I'm starting to just kind of accept that in my head that I'm not going to have a $30,000 campaign because I'm not going to have one of my characters nude on the cover. And that's, by the way, that's fine if you're into that kind of thing. It's fine. I'm not saying that it's evil and that you shouldn't do it. If you're into it, that's great. It's just, personally, as a creator, as a writer, it's it grinds my gears. when did it happen?
The beginning.
In the beginning.
It started off as small, and then it took up, and the creators just like threw an NSFW cover out there every now and again to see if they could make that 8K, 10K, 20K leap. But don't be discouraged, Nando, because I've seen creators who've put 10, 12, 15, 20 years into comics, and because they stuck with it for so long, that their presence in the industry and their ability to tell stories and put out content eclipses that NSFW experience, that fleeting experience that people pay, you know, just to have, or, you know, that one thing. So, I mean, hang in there, buddy. It's going to be okay. Like, we're going to make it. Like, those of us who have
depth, punch a wall.
Yeah. Great story.
Let me mute myself and punch the wall real quick.
But you'll have a shelf of like things that you could be proud of. I think at the end of the day, you know, looking at what everybody else is doing is great to an extent, but then you need to decide what everybody else is doing. How does that best serve you? And sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
So
yeah, Gareth's new to the scene and crazy. You'd rather put out a solid story. Yeah, you know, the most unfortunate thing of all of it, honestly, is that you'll find people that are really, really good storytellers, and then they realize like that's where all the money is. So then they just stop telling good stories and go to the money. But like then I know other people that are like, oh, I put out other people's books that have those because it brings all the money into my company. But then I continue to tell the stories that I want. Again, another thing I just couldn't do conscious wise. But if you can, then hey, more power to you. It's just not who I is.
I mean, I guess it also depends on the story too. Like if you're telling like a spy thriller, right? Then there's bound to be some like sexy scenes. I mean,
not in mine.
Who's ever
watched Last Job? The One Last Job doesn't have like any crazy sex stuff.
But like the James Bond series, like you know, it had some scenes. I mean, it was subtle, but it acknowledged that in reality, you know, sex is existent within the universe. That
right. Well, Bond Girls was there's a reason the term's Bond Girls,
right?
but it still wasn't what these covers are.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's not what I'm saying though. Charlie's Angels. I mean,
yeah,
the female version of Bond, they were sexy, tight suits, did really cool action shit like most guys do. But I mean, I'm sure if they would have had some NSFW covers, they would have sold more DVDs. But some people prefer to live in that genre of storytelling while others tend to live in like, well, what's the meaning of life? And, you know, what's it mean? What's it mean to be a good mom? What's it mean to be a mom while also being the most badass warrior in the land of like fantasy and science fiction, you know, and that sets you apart. So,
all right, Aaron Squared, who do you want to make mad?
Nobody. I want all backers to be beautiful. Like shit.
What a dream.
Everyone is valuable. Everyone is beautiful.
Yeah, on the inside as well as the outside.
Especially if it's an NSFW cover. No.
What are you guys looking forward to? All right, of course, getting your campaigns done and funded, but I mean, like over the next, let's say, year, like what kind of ideas do you have? What's your 2024 is looking like?
I have a pretty exciting 2024 ahead of me. I mean, if all works out, you know, I've been planning on continuing, you know, Manchild and my other series Seasons, and I'm going to be launching volume 3 of Seasons next year and issue 3 of Manchild, and also I'm working on a new series that I'm really excited to announce soon, hopefully, but it's something I've never done before, so I'm really excited about that. And then I also have a short story coming out in a anthology put out by the Global Frequency. It's going to be in their Mavericks anthology that I'm really excited about, that really proud of that story. So that'll be coming out next year. But I also want to finally hit some bigger conventions. I'm really trying to get into C2E2 next year, and I've never done any really large conventions. I've only ever done small shows and signings, and you know, probably the capacity would be around a few, you know, to 5,000 people at the most that I've ever done. So I'm excited to kind of get my name out there a little bit more, you know, having like hitting, meeting people physically more and having those interactions with customers and consumers and, you know, backers too, and like putting a face to the name of people that have supported my work for so long. And I'm really looking forward to that, because I feel like, you know, with the pandemic and everything that's happened, I feel like cons are finally getting to the point where they're kind of getting back to normal. So I'm hoping to take advantage of that next year.
Sounds awesome. Michael, what's up?
So much opportunity. So much opportunity. I will finally have something to sell at a con. So I'll be experimenting with local cons and consignments. I know some really cool celebrities that would love to do some stuff. I'm hoping to do some celebrity covers, maybe test the grounds with cosplay. I still have the podcast going strong, so we're going into a third year for that with Comics and Pop-Tarts. Still going to be editing, still going to be writing. I am going to try and query an agent because I do not want to have to do this grind with looking for writing work while also doing all the marketing stuff that I've been doing for the Kickstarter. So this past year, I wrote a pilot for Mossy Productions in Australia. Now that the strike is lifted, he's going to be selling that to LA sometime for the rest of the year. Maybe it gets picked up next year. Maybe it doesn't. I don't know. That's a game changer. So that might throw a curveball at me. It would be a welcome curveball. But I have some spec scripts and comic scripts. And since the genres have become somewhat of a cohesive hiring process in the last couple of years, where comics writers have been called up to do adaptations for film and consulting and stuff, it's not a far cry that that an agent wouldn't be interested in someone who can also write comics, including film. So right. I'm hoping to do that. I'm not going to do any big cons. I'm still going to keep to the small ones. So there's Kaiju Con in Alabama. There's a con that comes here. Fan Expo is doing something cool at the Coliseum this year that I'm going to try to get into in October, and they might come back again next year if it works out. The problem is they started their table prices off at about $250 to $500, which I heard is normal on the West and East Coast, but that to me down here is a little high. So there's another con that comes to the Coliseum aside from that show, and I'll do that, and maybe some anime fests and stuff. But other than that, I'm working on an anthology project with a team of writers that I've recruited over the last year, and I just secured Ray Dillon to do a painted cover for that. It's going to be a novel. It's not going to be a comic, but it has high hopes to be adapted later on. Because when you're trying to build like a universe and you want to tell a bunch of stories, the best way to prove a concept is publish it any way you can.
Yep.
Gamal Hennessy says that in the realm and medium of comics, in order to secure your copyright, you'd have to publish at least 2 issues.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not including getting, you know, the serial number from the U.S. Library of Congress. However, you right. go. I use WGA to get my ID number for the script itself, because if not, then you leave yourself liable to people echoing you or, you know, trying to steal your idea. So the best right. way to do that is to wrap it up in a novel where the idea, the names, locations and stuff are all protected, and you don't have to do that but once. And then you could just come back and adapt it later, because it's nothing to take a short story and turn it into a script. I mean, we've all been writing for a long time. It doesn't take me but 10 minutes to draft up 6 pages as far as like a page by page outline goes. Now I've been doing it for so long. So
yeah,
those are kind of like my 2024, and then building an online merchandise store that people can go to and just adding to my stuff, on my professional portfolio that I just relaunched so that I could find more work. Other than nice. That, man, that's it.
Awesome. Aaron Dose.
I've never done a con before, so I'm really wanting to start getting into that, since I've got quite a few comics now I can put out there. next issue of Enenra, hopefully next year, launch that. Fingers crossed, if the Gray Man 1 is successful, then 2 obviously will be next year. And you know, Ice and Bone sequel to Blood and Fire. So they're my 3 major things, plus the con, if I can fit that in somewhere. That would be pretty awesome. Because my son, he cosplays, so I'm sure he'd be up for doing a con at some point this year.
Yeah.
So I can sell and he can go out and spend the money I make.
That's awesome. Well, sounds like everybody has some good plans. So. You guys are always welcome to rejoin whenever you have stuff going on. I try to not schedule a super far way out and then just post and be like, who needs to come on? It's working a little bit so far. It is a little frustrating, but it's just a different way of doing it for me. I'm not used to it. But is there anything else that anybody feels like talking about or just wants to cause trouble about any other particular subject?
I'm not touching Marvels, that's for sure.
I haven't seen it yet.
You know what's really funny? Before we jumped on here, I saw a commercial. It was like 12 seconds, and it said number one in the world. And then I remember reading an article this morning, said the lowest release for a Marvel property. I was like, wow, they really want this to work, huh?
Did nothing else come out last weekend? That's why.
Well, most everything that comes out for me, I either wait till it hits Max, Paramount, or Peacock.
I'm gonna start doing that with my comic book releases. Kickstarter day one, it's like the number one in the world, and then make a really obscure category for it.
Well, it's like when you log in, they have the 1 through 10. None of that's true. They just want people to watch that. Like they took a movie from like 2009, and it's at number 3. Why?
Gareth wants to know, what are some tips to find your audience? How did you each find yours?
A lot of hard work.
I'm not sure I found mine yet. I just hit 25 backers. I thought maybe Samurai, Supernatural, and Demon Slaying would be enough, but I mean, maybe they're all Demon Slayed out from the All Hallows Eve event. Maybe they decide to put all their stock in the Polito crossover.
Maybe they're saving up for a Switch too. Anybody else? Nandor, what's up?
Yeah, you know, mine's been like Aaron said, it's like it's been a lot of hard work. Like there's, you know, I have you try everything, you know, because you're trying to see what works, and you know, exposure is everything. So like I really try to make sure that my books are at my local bookstore and comic book shops, you know, and because you find that one person who will, you know, just they're having a great day, or it's just the right day, and they see your book and they want to purchase it, and you know, they become a reader. And you know, so I think it's important to have, if you have a comic, try to reach out to local stores in your area. I've been able to do that, and a lot of them are very welcoming, and they're usually, you know, most of the time they're kind of excited because they're like, oh, there's actually someone here who cares about their local shop, and also they want to support you and all that stuff. So it kind of works out, and you know, you can build relationships that way. But even if you don't have a comic, something that I used to do before I put out my first book ever was, I would, you know, print out little postcards or flyers and, you know, go to the local library, or go find like public, you know, boards, bulletin boards, whatever, and like put your stuff out there. And, you know, you just never know who might see that. I think it's important to do that. Also look at local conventions that are around your area that, you know, wouldn't be too much of a high risk to travel, you know, just maybe, you know, the most I drive that I've ever driven for a con is like, you know, 3 or 4 hours. And it, you know, so like focus on that, but also, meet other creators, connect with other creators, learn from other creators, you know, see what they're doing. It's really important. Something that I try to stress and I always try to keep in mind is you really, you know, you have to be humble in this community, because it's really easy to get a chip on your shoulder to be like, mm-hmm. why are they so successful? You know, and I'm not, you know, but the way you mitigate that, and you learn from those people, and you try to watch and see, well, what are they doing that I'm not doing? And, you know, is it my book? Is it the way I'm presenting it? Is it my rewards? Is it, you know, you just kind of go down the list, you do a little inventory scan or housekeeping, and you try to figure out what it is. And I think that's really important. So like, you know, I've made some amazing relationships with other people who make comics, and, you know, it's awesome. Like, you know, if you can find people that share your passion, that love talking comics, and that you can, you know, really get along with, it can really change, it can help your campaigns, it can help your books, it can also just help to be around other people so that you can learn from them. So I think trying to meet people is really great, you know, the networking side of it, but also just trying to be humble and learn from each other and try to figure out what you have to offer. And that's something I've always struggled with in the years that I've been making comics. It's like, okay, what do my stories have to offer? What do I have to offer the comics community and readers? And how can I emphasize that and hone in on that so that when people see my stuff and they see that I'm working on something, that, you know, they'll have an idea of what they're in for, but mm-hmm. they'll also be like, this guy really cares about what he's doing, and, you know, why shouldn't we support him because he actually cares, you know? And that's something that I'm always looking for with people. It's like, you know, like, or do you want to make comics, or do you want to make comics? You know, that's kind of how I look at it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm in a few Facebook groups, you know, on chats and things like that. They always give good advice. You know, I always try to share my preview a lot, at least a month before I'm actually launching, A, to get feedback from other creators, but also to get the word out there to cross promote as well. That's another mm-hmm. thing. Get your, if you can do like a special, I did a special cover for with a War Lion and Blood and Fire, like a big poster print you'd get back in both, so that I think that helped a great deal. It's very hard. It's, you know, a long slog. It's definitely not a quick fire round where you get instant success, so just hang in there and keep going, really.
I think you just hit it. It was just the keep going part. Yeah. The longer you're at it, the more people are going to get to know who you are, your name, local shows as well, because then you're meeting your local people, and, you know, they'll be the ones that surprise you and just are kind of always there. But yeah, I mean, stuff like this, going on shows, that's how I've made a lot of the friends that I've made in the comic book industry, is just going on shows, and then like you'll be a guest with somebody else you've never met, and you'll be like, I kind of vibe with that person, and then you don't be scared to say, hey man, it was great to be on that show with you, like add them up as friends or whatever. And and then cross promo, like you said, is huge. Yeah. I mean, don't be scared to cross promo.
Yeah. Yeah. QR codes, the best. Just go on the, there's so many free websites out there, just type in your link, create that QR code, and then copy it and print it off and stuff. Yeah. It's so much hassle, less hassle.
You had a question pop up.
Yep, about how do we, most comic shops are tough to let indie comics in, especially down here in South Texas. How do we break that barrier? You break into their comic shop at night, and then you leave copies of your book is my best suggestion.
It's really as easy as walking in the store and being like, hey man, I'm a professional comic book maker. I just finished a run. Would you be interested in taking 5 or 6 issues? Most of the time, if you're like a first timer, they're not going to pay you for them. It's really hard for people to get into like previews and stuff. Since Diamond's down a little bit, people have been getting picked up, you know, like creators like Tony Cottrell just got Advent Comics into previews, which is the sister. And then there's more distribution, I'm sure, that's going to revolutionize that stuff. And now that you have the Comics Union, you know, the sky's the limit for an indie creator potential. But it's really a matter of going in and making, you know, some type of pedigree with the store owner and being like, hey, like if you want to get like a store exclusive cover, they cover the art, you pay for the print shipping, and then you're in their store. Like you could do it that way too. There's a bunch of different ways to go about it. Sometimes though, if you're in a large area where there's lots of creators coming to them, they try to dial it back, not to just keep it level, but they don't want to cater to too much indie because they still have to make money by selling stock. And the only way they do that is by ordering from the catalogs and the previews, because they know that stuff that they can move. Indie comics is, if you're not bringing an audience, they're taking a chance on you.
you run the risk of you becoming a liability to them. It's not just about you getting a book in the store. There's, you have to play to that business sense to it too. You can't just be like, I want my book in the store. That's great. Everybody wants that, but you have to respect the business side of it too. And if somebody tells you no, just be like, that's cool. Come back next year in 6 months with another book. Like, look, I got issue two. Maybe they'll take both, you know, because you've shown consistency.
I say don't hyper-focus on getting in shops because even if you're in their store, you're still the one that's going to have to do the promotion for it because they're not going to be promoting your book for you. So I would focus more on getting into shows or if they have local, like local comic book days. Like I've been to a multitude of those where we just got to go set up for free in our local comic shop and, you know, peddle as people came in and sign it for them and get to know. That's another good way to get to know local people. I just don't hyperfixate on how many stores you get in, or especially as you're indie, because if you grow, then yeah, you get yourself in a catalog and then you have to still do all the legwork and hammer all those stores for the same thing. But you can be like, hey, I'm in this giant catalog of books that are sitting on your shelves. So I don't know. I don't have a whole lot of love for retail right now. So like I'm a little bit weary in the way I talk about it. But again, don't hyperfixate.
And everyone's a little different, you know, like, I mean, it depends on the owner, who's there that day, or, you know, what their specialty is, you know, what, you know, if they care about a local scene, you know, sometimes I found if, you know, I never expect them to purchase my books from me. I always go there and just, can I just get a little bit of shelf space and, you know, have it here and just have it available, because when I do local cons, and if someone picks up an issue one or a volume one of my book, they'll ask, are your books in, you know, are they in any shops? And at least I can tell them actually they are, you know, and you can go there next week or in 2 weeks or whatever, and you can get issue two, you know, you don't have to wait for me to do another show again. So that can always be a good thing, or, you know, go to my Kickstarter or go to my website or whatever, and you can purchase it there. But, you know, when I walk into a shop, I never know what to expect. And I just go, you know, this is what I have to offer. If you like it, cool. If you don't, I'll be back.
Right.
Here's an alternate strategy too. Instead of focusing on shops, cons are where it's at. So say Nandor, yes. you have access to CTV2. I know that you live in Missouri and you're closer to Chicago for me, right?
Right.
So
right.
Let's run through this. So I'm in South Mississippi. I could get to Fan Expo in New Orleans. That would be a long drive for you. So let's say you and I hit up on DMs on any platform and we're like, hey, man, I'm going to send you 20 copies of Wild Oni. Will you take them to C2E2? You give me 20 copies of The Fabled and I'll take them to Fan Expo. And you have your social media and contact stuff in the back of your book on your last page. And if someone buys that, now someone in the south area of the country has your product and they have your contact information. I think that would be a more valuable method of distribution if you're brand new and you're looking to break into shops. Because if you just like me and you just did one issue, I mean, sure, I could go to Tessa Newman down the street who did work for IDW and be like, hey, I'll buy and give you 25 issues if you do a special like retailer cover, which I can show off on social media and that'd be great for clicks and views, but that's not going to guarantee me any sales or conversion rates. Right. And that's not going to guarantee that anybody down here is going to buy that book. I mean, she might sell those covers because they're going to buy her artwork, which is the point of doing exclusive covers, but that doesn't mean that those are going to sell. So it would be worth doing something like that, where you actually get your book at like a different show. I know with the Ink Family, we did that a few times this year. Some people charge, some people don't. I think it's really about convention awareness. So if you know someone's going to New York Comic Con and you can't make it and they want to, you know, charge you $50 and you mail them the books, I mean, I know the communication there be kind of sketchy, right? So as long as there's open communication, there's nothing wrong with that. But I mean, I wouldn't mind paying someone $50 to take my books to New York Comic Con, because I mean, you're looking at getting in front of eyes of other creators as well, and you never know who's watching tables looking for what. And I've heard stories from editors, especially from editors like Andy Schmidt at Comics Experience, and also does the CEX Publishing. That's usually where they shop for new writers, new editors, new artists,
right?
So that could be game changing. So forget trying to get into, you know, to small shops and stores and retail fronts, especially with the revolution that's about to come down the pipeline for retail anyway. I would try to get with creators and try to figure out a way that, you know, you could help each other out by swapping, you know, volume and representing each other at the store. I think that'd be a greater representation and a better use of your time, because it is a grind to go and meet with store owners and being like, well, what is your stocks like? Did you move anything? And, you know, you can't always rely on the store owner to keep up with your numbers for your books. They're selling freaking a million titles, right? Just to try to keep the lights on. So if you don't go in there and like, you're the Fritos Lay's chip guy where you're like checking on the shop all every week. You know what I'm talking about? Just like hang that up. There's no data to be given there. You're just putting your book on the storefront, hoping to sell stuff. And that's not really smart business as far as like being a creator. That's not where you want to be. You want to be in a store, but you would rather be in a distribution catalog. And the only way to do that is to continue creating comics and build your volume up and then continue working with other creators. Make friends, make contacts, network. Collaboration is the lifeline of comics creatorship, period. That's one of the first things they'll teach you at Comics Experience, or anywhere for that matter, is that you cannot do comics by yourself. If you can, you're the rock star. Nobody owes you anything, and you can do it all. But how many people that you can honestly say really know how to do that? I mean, yeah, sure. Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, they can do a lot of stuff, but can they do the business side? I think Tom Brevoort would disagree. They don't even like the business side, right? And despite Jim Lee being, you know, the executive now for DC, if he still is, I don't know now because I don't keep up. He would rather probably be on the creative side. So, you know, you always pass that stuff off to people that know who love that. So there's always going to be the business guy. There's always going to be the artist. There's always going to be the writer. There's always going to be the guy that sells stuff. So long as you're the one that has to kind of do it all, you have to kind of find a creative way to kind of help source that out.
And when you're an indie, you're doing it all. Yeah. Especially if you're the writer. Welcome. Yeah. Feel our pain.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a plethora of Udemy classes that I would love to learn how to draw so I could be that writer artist. Right. But I've already spent 30 years learning how to write. I would be in my 60s being like, I finally made it.
That's what you're drawing on the microwave, Michael. Oh, man. I dropped everyone's links again in the comments. Nice. And if I can go ahead and really apply myself tomorrow morning, then I can get this uploaded on all the channels that I have the podcast on, and I'll make sure your links are in there as well. I think we've solved every problem that people have related to comic books. We'll see everyone at San Diego Comic-Con next year. You know, just the four of us having solved all those problems. So I really do appreciate you guys hanging out and coming on. It's always nice to talk to creators, and I haven't talked to Nandor and Aaron 2.0 in a long time. And then Michael, I've never talked to you. So it's nice to meet you digitally. So make sure that if you're listening to this, you check out everybody's campaigns. Go look at it. It's worth the time. It's worth the time investment. Hey, here's the other thing. If you hate it, if you hate their campaign, share the link.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just because you never know. I mean, if everyone hated our stuff.
Why do you hate it?
Or that.
Share the link, hashtag why.
Yeah.
Share the love, all the hate. You know,
that's right. leave the comment so everyone can read why you hate these people's books. That's entertainment for days. As for me, just make sure you check out aarondown.substack.com and the new TikTok that started today. Aaron writes stuff. I'm going to do more Catalyst stuff. That's going to be on TikTok, but I'm running the crap. So it's just going to be more personalized than having its own little TikTok. And then Facebook, Catalyst Comic Studio. And I put that on there because I'm going to actually start using it again. 2,500 people on there, and I just haven't even posted on there in forever. Wow. So go check that out. And then Fall of Night's coming in January. Check all these great people's campaigns out. Who do I want to pick? Aaron 2.0, give us, as we end this stream, the final word. It can be a string of words or just one word, but give us the final word.
Back.